Welcome back, everyone. We're glad that you're here with us today. And we have Bill with us again. Bill, thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me back here, Doris.
This is a very interesting subject about talking to people and reclaiming conversations, isn't it, Bill?
It's near and dear to my heart, Doris.
And Brendan, we talked about people in different generations. You just graduated from the university. And don't you think that this is a good article for people of all ages?
I do. I think that not just my generation and the generations underneath me, but even the older generations who might start being sucked into our cell phones might learn a lot from this.
Right. So we can learn from this, and we can also see the good and bad things about having some of our smartphones. I don't think we want to get along without them, but how do we use them the right way? That's what we're going to talk about a little bit today, too. And we're glad to have Albert with us. Albert, what do you think about the article that we're discussing on pages 10 and 11?
Well, I feel like it's really insightful. There are a few things that, you know, as I'm reading along, I'm taking notes and learning about, and hopefully I will be able to put into my daily life.
Right. This is a good lesson for everybody, for whatever generation you're in, no matter about the generation gap. Actually, there's always not such a big gap. There's certain things that grandmas and high school kids even have in common these days. Isn't that right, Bill?
Well, I see all generations using these phones, mm-hmm. and whether it's a smartphone or a tablet, Doris. As I was putting together my book, I was observing people. There's all generations, and I will see grandfathers playing Candy Crush or poker,
really?
On their phones. They're playing games. They're watching videos.
Grandfathers?
I see younger generations. I see everybody using their phone.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to cover a little bit about Sherry Turkle. I think it's important to talk about the author of this book because
this is a book review, right?
This is a book review.
And it's about the one written by Sherry Turkle. So do you know more about her?
Yeah, and I just want to point out to her, I mean, this is not some technology naysayer. I want to give a little background on her. She has actually studied this topic for 30 years, mm-hmm. and she actually is a director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self. She's a professor at MIT. She has a PhD from Harvard in sociology and personality psychology.
That's what I wanted to mention, is that's why she uses all these big words. You can tell when PhDs write these things. They're kind of hard words.
Yeah, and she eloquently explains them all, as we covered yesterday. Right. But the reason I point this out is 20, 25 years ago, she was a strong advocate of technology and integrating the self and technology. And she's kind of changed her position on this as she has seen the transformation in society. Best talk on TED, on the TED Talks that I've seen, is her conversation called Connected But Alone that she did 4 years ago. And I recommend
that's probably
that.
Still on TED Talks.
Oh, it's still. There's about 3.5 million views, and it's pretty high-level language. If you want to, you can actually put on Mandarin subtitles, but I recommend that for everybody. You can see her.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is the content great, watch her delivery. She has got an excellent delivery, very, I would say, professional, smooth, charming.
Do you want to watch that sometime, huh?
Oh, sign me up. Bill has convinced me.
Not during office hours.
No. Okay. Later. Right now.
Yeah, later. Okay, but that's good to know that she's really knows what she's talking about.
Well, I wanted to give a background on mm-hmm. her, and she has a unique perspective on this, and she has researched this for 30 years. This is not somebody who's just all of a sudden decided they don't like this stuff.
Yeah.
She has done the work on this.
Well, now, Bill, you have been teaching in a lot of different government agencies and schools and on Studio Classroom, and you've written another book. What was your first book, Bill?
Well, the first book was about speeches, giving English speeches, how to prepare English speeches, the English speech contest, and it teaches people how to prepare for prepared and impromptu speeches.
So now that's talking about speeches. Why did you decide to do one on this subject? We can see that your new book just came out. And what made you decide to do that?
Well, I wrote Heads Up Taiwan because it's near and dear to my heart. I'm here, and I've actually seen society here transform over the last 10 years. I've been here for 13 and a half years, and I've really watched as our society has changed from being very lively and vibrant and engaging to now we've become very insular. And it's on a micro level, which means personal level, and I actually take a look at how does this affect society on a macro level, because I think our individual behavior actually has pretty big consequences for our society.
So that's why you wrote this book. Mm-hmm. So some of the people that are seeing this, they might want to get Reclaiming Conversation, but I'm sure everybody will want to get your book too, Bill.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah.
that they do.
You can find it on books.com.tw.
Okay.
And a couple other bookstores.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say now today's lesson, the text that we're taking here from Sherry's book, we're on page 11 today, and somehow or other we're talking about pilots on airplanes in their cockpit. Wow, let's see what that has to do with. Let's read the first section down through line 13.
Pilots in a cockpit. In her disturbing book, Turkle details the negative impact of moving from conversation to mere connection. It ranges from the end of imaginative and creative daydreaming, with a phone always handy, any spare second is filled with trolling through apps or checking Facebook, to the inability of being empathetic to others, which requires eye contact, listening, and attending to someone, to even the inability of being true to oneself. Today, unfettered journal entries have been replaced by carefully constructed positive posts on Facebook. The damage of the age of the cell phone impacts everything we do.
Well, we started out about talking pilots in the cockpit. What does that have to do with it?
We actually find out about that title later in the reading, but I feel like the direction she's going with is that how, you know, it seems like people more and more nowadays, they like to immerse themselves away from everyone else. So they look at their phone, they put on their headphones or earbuds, and it's like they're in a plane flying by themselves. They're flying solo.
Mm-hmm. So they're not connecting with people.
Not at all.
And what do you think about that, Brendan?
Well, I find that when you isolate yourself, that you provide a certain amount of safety for yourself. This particular isolation is a bit more insidious, to use a word we used yesterday, because it's giving us the illusion that we're staying connected with people,
right,
when in reality, we're really walling ourselves off. Mm-hmm. Our phones are able to connect us to everyone through either the internet or texting or whatever it might be, because now cell phones are just microcomputers that we carry around in our pocket.
That's true.
So anything that we would have access to on a larger machine, we basically have access to on our phone. And so all of this power, all of this ability, and all the different tools that the cell phone has, it gives us the illusion that we're getting stuff done and that we're staying connected. But really, we're walling ourselves off from everything that's going on the outside when we focus on our phone.
That's true. Like if you're walking down the street and a lot of people just have the earplugs in and they're listening to something on their phone, they don't even see, you know, the birds that are flying around. They don't see the flowers that are nearby. And you just kind of miss out on everything. Besides that, they don't even see the cars that might hit them if they're not careful when they cross the street. So this really takes you out of the world that you're in. And then if you're sitting on a train or an MRT or something or a bus, you could do a little creative daydreaming. You could think about things, but you don't think about things if you're listening all the time. So your creative daydreaming, which we really need, just goes out the window.
One of the things that I need, Doris, is time for contemplation.
Right.
I need no distractions, and I need time to figure things out.
Without
and
something in your ear telling
without
me something
Without
something
else. In my ear, without looking at a screen. You think about it, we look at screens all day long.
That's
we're
true.
At the office, we're looking at screens, and we're carrying these screens with us, and then a lot of times many of us have earphones in, and we're not making space for contemplation. And contemplation is part of sorting life out.
That's true. So we just keep trolling through or going through one after another, looking at our apps or seeing if anybody put something on Facebook in the last hour.
Right. I really like what we're talking about here. It's because I feel like people are afraid of like being unproductive or bored. They're like, well, hey, I'm supposed to be productive, so you know people won't think that I'm being lazy or I don't want to be bored because it's such a bad thing. But you know, being by yourself and contemplating And, like, you know, later on, like, line 10, we read about how, like, journal entries now are being carefully constructed, where, you know, journal entries are supposed to be something personal that you can, like, vent and write about and maybe reflect on and be able to, like, grow from. But now we're just editing it.
Well, down in line 7, though, it says, you know, like, when you check through Facebook and these things, that it takes away the ability to be empathetic to others. Well, in some ways, when I look at some things on Facebook, I become empathetic. I think about it, and I might even write a few lines to that person because I might not know about it, and I see it on Facebook. So on one hand, people who are not here, that are living in other countries, you do have an opportunity to be empathetic, but you don't want to do that all the time. And it is good to have the face-to-face contact, but if they're in another city, another country, I can't have a face-to-face. So the good thing is that being on some of these things gives us an opportunity to express our sympathy to people, and we understand how they feel. So that's one of the good things.
Yeah, there are good things
right.
to all of this.
I wanted you to mention both.
And you mentioned the Facebook platform, and actually, I think there's a bigger world than this. We started this article than what we started the article with as far as just phones. Sure. And I think Sherry Turkle's work, she covers not just smartphones, but the tablets, but then also we're stretching into social media, whether it's Facebook
right.
or it's Line or Twitter,
sure.
add in the Internet. And so it's not just about phones.
No.
What she's talking about applies to all of that.
Right. And, of course, it's better if you have eye contact. And if you listen to someone when they're talking and you hear and their expression, you can help them better. It's better to do that. Sometimes we can't. So we can use both, but don't just do one instead of it. Let's do both.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this thing when you talk about sympathy, and I see
yeah.
that too, Doris. If I go on Facebook, and I'm glad I can see if somebody posts something on the other side of the world. You know, the flip side of that is, and I'm going to say this, is that we probably are inundated with that, and maybe we spread ourselves too thin,
mm-hmm.
and I think
sure.
our sympathy just becomes like a momentary thing, whereas I think what Sherry Turkle was talking about, this conversation and personal then, when we weren't spread so thin,
mm-hmm.
checking up on the lives of 500 people, we
3,
actually could focus on 5 people instead.
And sort of to bounce off of your idea a little bit, this doesn't extend to just having a conversation and maintaining contact with someone. You will find, or at least I find, that with my generation and younger, we tend to confuse being informing people and reposting articles about some social injustice for actually doing something about it.
Oh, that's true.
You know, mm-hmm. We will see posts on poverty, and our hearts will be broken, and we will share it, and we will say, this is a terrible thing. We should all act to reduce poverty in this nation. And then we proceed to do absolutely nothing about it, other than just posting about it on Facebook.
Well, I really like the direction we're going with this, because I feel like it's almost giving us a way out. Being able to comment on someone's misery, it's like writing off our guilty conscience. It's like, well, I did something. You know, I clicked that like button, and I said my words, and so I don't need to invest any more time on it.
Well, that could be a danger, yeah.
Our empathy has been reduced to clicking like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move on to the next post,
right.
whereas we're not becoming more involved.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still, I agree with you that it is definitely a plus side to be able to maintain contact with someone who is far away, especially if they are very close, like me being able to stay in contact with my family who is in the United States.
Right. So that there's good sides on it. It's just that it's gone too far that one way. You know, it's good to keep the contact, but we still, sometimes if I'll see something that happened that's sad for some of my friends, mm-hmm. then I still might send them an email or even give them a phone call. But I didn't know it until I saw it. So it can work both ways.
Well, I know the way you are. You might see something that happens to a friend in San Francisco. I know the way you are. You'll call that person and
yeah.
check on them. Unfortunately, too many of us might see something about that friend in San Francisco. We click like, move on, and think that's enough.
Yeah. Mm.
But you'll call. I know that.
Yeah, because I feel kind of empathetic mm. towards those people. But anyway, this unfettered, is the saying here, unfettered just really just means that it's not limited by rules or anything controlling. These journal entries, that we used to have. We used to say everything, how we felt and what we did. Now we just put down nice facts. We don't really say how we felt, right?
Well, we have to curate our lives.
Yes.
And we have to make our lives look really good.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want any of the messy stuff on there.
Right. So that's one of the problems that they have with this. Well, let's take the next paragraph and see about in the workplace how it works.
In the workplace, for example, employees turn on their screens and put on large earphones to block out the rest of the world, resembling pilots in a cockpit, according to one manager. It is not that the employees want privacy or solitude. In fact, the fear of solitude is one of the major changes wrought by the smartphone. People are never alone and never want to be alone. As a result, even the simple assignment of working on a project is unfathomable to younger employees. They need to work in groups.
Well, there's two things here. There's working alone and working in groups. And sometimes it's good to work in a group. You need to, but sometimes you need to think first before you go to the group. You have to have something to offer to the group. So if I go to a group and we don't know what we're going to talk about, it's going to waste a lot of time. So if I have a little solitude before I go to the group, what are we going to discuss and prepare, then I need that quiet time. So I think the two work together, Bill.
Yeah, I think the ideal situation is a blending of both. We need to put together some stuff on our own, gather our thoughts, create some ideas.
Facts, but everything.
And gather our facts and data, but then also to come together and share that information and be willing to accept feedback, criticism sometimes, on some of our ideas with the team.
Right, this is where we get the pilots in here, right?
Yeah, and you know, I've actually worked in offices where there are really high cubicle walls, and sometimes there are no walls at all, there's no dividers, and it's fun because sometimes I wish I had some privacy for myself to be able to think, but at times when there are no walls, I feel like, you know, it's a lot more creativity is flowing around, you can converse with coworkers, and you get to brainstorm more often.
Yeah. This word...
Sometimes it's more just talking than brainstorming when there's no walls. Sometimes you can't get your words in because somebody's out.
Yeah, that happens.
It works both ways.
He's talking about privacy or solitude that we're looking at there in line 18.
Maybe walls that aren't too high.
I think there's a need for some walls. Of course, you know, there's an old saying, good fences make better neighbors.
Yeah.
So I think there is something to be said about having something in between.
A little thing.
Yeah. That word solitude just means the ability to be alone and be okay with it. So,
right. So it's just that sometimes people, they never even want to be alone. They say, oh, I better find somebody. There's nobody here. That's not good. You have to be able to be alone, don't you think, Brendan?
Well, as an extrovert, I find that particularly difficult since I get my energy from being around people and interacting with people. But at the same time, I do also enjoy my quiet time alone where I can just work on my own personal projects or be alone in my head and daydream for long periods of time.
You need both.
In this book, one of the things that Sherry Turkle does talk about, it's not in the article, is that when our younger generations are brought up, always relying on the phone and never being able to be in complete solitude, they never learn how to deal with that, and they become very uncomfortable if they don't have access to a phone, access to that connection. And she actually sees solitude as a good thing, being comfortable with that.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have both. You have solitude, but the phone is a good instrument when you need it to connect. So there's both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we have one more paragraph here. Let's read it first, and then we'll see how we can discuss this to finish up this good article, which gives a lot of advice.
Turkle is not anti-technology. She does not pine for a past that has disappeared. Instead, she compellingly describes how we are becoming unnecessarily diminished in our abilities as humans. The answer is not to reject technology, but to use it properly. We can become different kinds of consumers of technology, just as we have become different kinds of consumers of food, she writes. Reclaiming Conversation is an important book, one that hopefully will be read and talked about, or at least posted about extensively on social media, so that its vital message can break into the millions of cockpits that now make up our society.
Terkel is not anti-technology, and I had actually covered that a little bit earlier today, Doris, because she is an advocate for all of this. She's just advocate for technology. She just really wants us to balance things out, use it in its proper place. Don't overuse it and let it fill up every space in your life.
I like the word here. She does not pine for something. When you pine for something, you have a longing. Oh, I just wish I could do that.
Yeah, well, I look at that and I think of all the former loves I had when I was in high school or college, and I miss them, and I pine for
don't
them.
Don't pine for that, Bill. That's good. Yeah.
Oh, when I look at that, I feel like many teachers pine for the days when students were better behaved, but I know where Bill's at now.
Yeah. Well, I don't pine for the past. Like when I first came to Asia, and it took me 3 weeks to get a letter, and, you know, I don't really pine for that time when I was so cut off from my family completely. You know. So it's good to have a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah, yeah, we
can
get lost in
nostalgia. You don't have to have them on the phone every minute, that's true. But, you know, it's kind of nice to have a little closer connection nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Doris. Now, as we move on, instead, she compellingly describes how we are becoming unnecessarily diminished in our abilities as humans.
And this is really bad because we can see it in comments on the Internet. I really dislike reading comments on the Internet. It's people being very, very vicious and disgusting to each other because they're like, hey, you know, I'm just talking to someone else that's a username. I don't see them. I don't know who they are about or what they're about. And I'm just going to troll them.
Yeah, it's the fact that they're not talking to a human. They're talking to a blank screen.
And they can say whatever they want.
They can say whatever they want and have it not really affect them. And they don't. The thing is, what's really dangerous about this is that that's not the mindset that they're thinking. If they're saying something vicious or, you know, anger, out of anger, they're just thinking about how angry they are and how this person must be so terrible for, you know, for thinking something so repulsive. Or if it's, you know, in the case of, like, you know, online bullying or something, it might be, I feel bad, therefore I'm going to say these things because it makes me feel better, and they don't actually think about who is on the other side.
Yeah, it's like dumping your garbage on everybody sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. These guys had mentioned the comment sections. Yeah. I call them argument sections, argument and insult sections. Right. But Sherry Terkel says the answer is not to reject it, but to use this technology properly.
I think that's a very good sentence. I underlined that one with a yellow pencil because the answer is not to reject. Don't say, okay, let's not use technology, but use it properly. So we have to figure out how we can use it properly, Bill.
Well, we need to become different kinds of consumers of technology, just as we became different kinds of consumers of food. All these different platforms actually require unique skill sets. There's a unique skill set required using LINE, using Twitter, using Facebook, using text messages, using email, and we actually need to learn how to use these things so that we use them effectively, and we also treat people humanely.
You know, back in high school, which was like about 10 years ago for me or whatnot, we had economics classes, and in that we had a week or two devoted to like writing and balancing checkbooks. Now I'm wondering if high school or schools in general should teach people, hey, these are the different methods of communication, and this is the proper way to use it.
Do they teach you that in college now?
No, but I'm wondering, sort of on the flip side, if sites like Facebook or Twitter or other social media, or even the cell phones themselves, the developers, I wonder if the people who make and design these websites could do something to the visual or graphical design to perhaps push us more in a direction toward realizing that, yes, there is a human on the other side of this conversation.
I'm really glad you mentioned this because I think just about a week ago or so, Twitter mentioned that, hey, they're going to make it easier for you to report people who are abusing you or using really non-conducive language, you know, so you can block them, you can screen them out, and just remove them from your presence. So maybe they are taking a step towards that direction.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, in the functions that they have, but maybe we can explore ways of just changing the visual design or the sound effects or something else so that not just words and verbal communication are happening, but also other forms of communication.
Well, this is going to take a little bit of just people have to get sit alone and be quiet and in solitude and think about something. But, Bill, I think our time's almost up. Would you like to wrap this up now? We are not telling people not to use their smartphones, but what are we telling them?
What Sherry Turkle is getting to and telling people is let's have a conversation on this. And that's what she's finishing with at this article. She doesn't want people to stop. She just wants people to take a look at this and evaluate what they are doing.
And did you tell them that in your book too, Bill?
Yeah. Actually, I do. I don't want people to stop using this stuff. No. They're great tools. I just want us to think about, okay, we know the what. We know what people do. I actually take a look at, okay, why? What are the roots of this behavior? Why are we doing this? And then also then I get into the consequences. Okay, what are the outcomes? And so the why and the consequences are the conversation we're not having right now, and that's actually what I get to in my book, Heads Up Taiwan.
Okay, well, don't forget, it'll be available for everybody, and I'm sure that Bill would be happy if you all get a copy. Right, Bill?
I might even sign them all,
yes. Of course. I don't know, that might be kind of hard to do.
Nicely.
Can you do that on the web?
My hand will be sore.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Hey, well, thanks for being with us, Bill. It's good to have you
Great
here again.
Thanks.
And good luck in all your writings and adventures that you're doing. And for the rest of you, we're going to be back again for other programs coming up soon. So stay tuned every day for Advanced, your window on the world. Thanks for being with us today. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.